wander in from the bus and things. My name is Kata Schwain, and I teach at Northfield College in Northfield, Minnesota. I teach Great beginning. I don't even remember where I teach anymore. This is what Holden can do for you, right? I teach at St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota. I teach composition and creative writing. I'm a poet by training. And so we've spent this week examining really closely poems from various time periods by various poets. And our discussion has, well, most of the time we kind of spend just really getting into the nuts and bolts of the poem itself. But the kind of overarching conversation has to do with what makes a great poem. What makes a poem great? And the very first day, I had the group that was in here come up. They pretended that they were on the board of the Norton Anthology Committee, and that they were going to have to determine which poems got into the Norton Anthology. But they were going to have to come up with some sort of criteria for how they were going to address each poem. And so the criteria that they came up with on Monday, which we can, everyone always should feel free to question or add to at any moment during any part of the discussion. They decided that a great poem speaks to us on an initial reading. So something in the poem grabs us, makes us want to read again. It could be an image, it could be the narrative, it could be the subject, any number of things. But that on initial reading, a poem speaks to us. They also said that then that poem keeps speaking to us. So we keep returning to the poem and learning new things about it every time we return to it. The second thing people claimed was that great poems have music to them. The third thing they said was that there was some intentionality about form. So whether the poem is a sonnet, whether it's rhymed couplets, whatever it is, whether it's free verse, we have a free verse poem today, that there's some intentionality about the form. Also we said attention to language, that there should be some care taken with language, and whether the language is very conversational, very colloquial, or whether it's really high diction, that we have a sense that the poet is paying attention to that. Later, we added the idea of imagination, and specifically a focus on the image in the imagination, that is sometimes what brings poems to life. And then someone finally said, well, yeah, and all of these things should all be working together to make meaning, to give us the experience of the poem, right? So that they should be working together. So today I want to start out by asking this question. Before I ask the question, let me also say, we talked a little bit about this, that many poems have a sort of superficial subject that they seem to be about, and then a sort of more real or underlying subject or emotion or theme or problem or issue that's below that sort of superficial or ostensible sort of subject on the top. Now, sometimes the superficial subject and the real subject can be the same. If you read a Pablo Neruda love poem, after you examine it for a while, it generally turns out that it is indeed about love. But on Monday, we examined a Keats poem, La Belle Dame Sans Merci, and it seems to sort of be about love, maybe at one level, or seduction, but we kind of got to the place where it also was about grief and being in between places. We talked about this feeling of being in the gloaming of things ending and not being sure what to do, and sometimes in relationship to love, but sometimes in relationship to other things. So does that make sense that a poem can sometimes have two subjects, and sometimes these are the same, but sometimes they're quite different? So you might read a poem about a vacuum, and it really turns out to be about, you know, death or something like that. Okay. So my first question to you is, why are there not very many poems about motherhood? With
mothers don't have time to write poems about
Yes! Okay! Mothers don't have time to write poems. Amen. Okay, great. Yes. Yes. Any other reasons?
There is so much we do that it is impossible to narrow it down to something that somebody would really want to grasp.
Okay. So that even if you had time to write, that often we think of poetry as being a sort of moment of distillation or clarity, where we make clear something clear for the reader. And sometimes if you're feeling really scattered in your brain, even if you have time to write, it's hard to find a way to distill that in a way that makes sense to somebody else. Okay? Other people.
I'm thinking, so you're recently a mother.
Yeah.
And your mother
And I should also point out that I was in the dining hall this morning and Sean was like, wonder why you picked today's poem. Yeah, okay. So go ahead.
And
yes, I have it. And
you've clearly been somewhat inspired by your own mother. Mm-hmm. How many poems have you written to or about her?
About my mother?
Yes.
Or about being a mother?
Either one.
Well, I think that that becomes an issue, like my mom was talking about when she was talking about her book yesterday, that theoretically, you know, you can be, well, I would have to think about that, Sean, for longer. But I have, since becoming a mother, it's been most of what I've written about. I will say that. Since becoming a mother, when I sit down to write, it's A, hard to find the time to write, and B, yeah, as a writer, I would say, when I sit down to write, it's hard to distill things in the same way.
Yeah. I think if you're trying to, feelings around mothers or motherhood, mm-hmm. if you're trying to write about your mother or even how you feel about motherhood, it is very hard to get to the place where it's something you can look at and really even come to one, even a sense of understanding it or even trying to understand the relationship.
So it's really complex.
Yeah.
Also, I think she was saying that the process of raising a child is so long and complex that you never feel like it's over and you can look back on it.
Okay, and sort of the what it's temporally like to be a mother is going to come up today in the poem, so that's great. Keep that in mind. Yeah.
So do you think there's a perceived bias that maybe people aren't interested in poems about motherhood?
Okay, well, let's talk about that now, because my lovely husband who's here today... And I were on a hike to Monkey Bear Falls yesterday, and we were walking along, and he was like, so you're doing that motherhood poem tomorrow? And I was like, yep. He was like, bet you're going to get a lot of men at that session. So why would he have said that?
It's uncomfortable.
Why?
I think perhaps, I don't know about if it's our cultural thing, but in our culture, I don't know that we give guys a direct, helpful role as they become parents. And they have to pioneer through their own, you and your husband, pioneer through their own relationship to this new life brought into their life. What will they do with it? Mothers go through the same thing. But I think it's harder for a guy. My heart goes out.
Okay. So that they might not relate to these poems as well.
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Anybody? Yeah.
I'd add that as a parent, there's a certain amount of defensiveness that fathers have about motherhood. There's this, you know, when my kids get hurt, if I'm the only option, they'll run to me. But if Julie's in the house, they run to her.
Yeah.
And so there's a certain amount of angry and defensiveness, I think, about motherhood for fathers.
Okay.
And for other people, it might not have relevance. So there's this.
Okay. It might not have relevance, okay? But what if I had said that the superficial subject of today was scuba diving? How many of you are, like, really into scuba diving? But would you have looked at that and thought, I will not read a poem about scuba diving. It has no relevance to me.
Yeah.
I propose that you offer as an example war being the subject of the poem.
Okay, yes.
Because that is sufficiently repulsive and disassociated from what many of us have ever done.
Okay.
But I think there's an approach avoidance thing. The more meaningful it is to you, the scarier it can be. War is something that I've never experienced. I would read poems about war and I would tinker around with it, but I would, like, if motherhood were something that were of really strong interest to me, let me finish. If it were at the same time, I mean, I'm here, so clearly it's of some interest.
Yeah.
But there's also this anxiety tension that comes along with it. So the more, it's really an affectively loaded thing. It's really an emotionally loaded thing to talk about our mothers. And if it's really low on that emotional load, then I'm not going to show up. And if it's really high on that emotional load, I might not show up because it's nervous making, it's uncomfortable, it's all of these other emotions. And so for consumers of the poetry, it seems like it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing. And almost nobody has no feelings about this.
Okay. Well, yeah. One more and then another.
Motherhood is used to communicate an experience or a feeling many times. This morning in the text study, the last chapter of Isaiah is telling Israel how they are going to return to mother, they will nurse at the wonderful ample bosom of mother. It's the text for tomorrow is Isaiah 66, full of details that communicate to anyone who knows anything about motherhood that this is good.
Okay.
You're going to return to a God that loves you.
Which prompts me to think that if we conceived of God more in feminine terms than always masculine, then it might get over the kind of cultural, or I hesitate to say it, but maybe sexist term later about.
I don't hesitate to say that. No, I mean Petter. Petter didn't mean he didn't want to come to the session. He just making it.
Well, I just think there is a cultural bias against historically who were poets, men, and they're not going to write motherly poems.
Right.
And B, unfortunately, because of a sexist society, in terms of mothers not being as valued as men in terms of their productivity and efficiency and
power.
Development of culture,
power.
There's a bias that really sort of has a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's changed a lot probably in the last 30, 40 years, but not enough. So
part of the question that I want to ask as we look at this poem is that certainly motherhood is the superficial topic of the poem. The question that I want to ask is, for a mother, a poem about motherhood, to be great, does the quote-unquote real subject have to be about a universal emotion? Does that make sense? Or no? Should I say that again?
Yeah, say it again. Please.
Okay. Because is motherhood a universal? Okay, so.
No, because you said for a mother, so readers aren't all mothers, right?
Right, no. Okay, so the superficial subject of the poem, it's clearly about being a mother. Okay? But for a poem that's about motherhood to become a great poem, right, that's anthologized, would it be okay if the real subject, right, that was underneath was about sort of mother love, like that kind of specific love that a mother has for a child? If that is the real subject, part of the conversation we had before was that the real subject, we thought, might have to be universal. That is, an emotion that everyone has the possibility to experience or have experienced in their life. Theoretically, a mother's love for a child is not something that every reader of the poem could have experienced. Does that make sense? So my question is, for a poem about motherhood to be great, does the real subject need to be about something more universal than simply the love of a mother for her child? And we're going to look at this poem, and I'm going to ask whether you think its real subject is ultimately the love of a mother for its child or something else. Does that make sense? Okay. I also want to say...
I have a question.
Yes. Yeah.
Are we talking mostly... I keep thinking I'm on the right track, and then I keep hearing people say things that I think I'm not on the right track. Are we talking about poems that you or I or someone would, or some guy would write about being a mother? Or could it be, I mean, not everybody is a mother, male
right.
or female, but everybody has a mother. So are we also talking about poems that you would write about your mother, a mother?
Yes, although there's not a lot in the literary canon also about.
Okay, but I mean as far
either
as...
Either way.
Not having feeling, everybody has a mother. So I
oh, I see,
have
so that's
some
your emotion
opinion
of...
going up, you know, the line rather than...
Yeah.
And actually the only poem I can think of about mother is... Edgar Guest wrote a mother poem in sometime in the 20s, I think. And he was very popular amongst that time period. But
okay.
I'm sure you don't think Edgar Guest is a great poet. But nonetheless,
I don't know him. I don't know
but
him.
But nonetheless, so. He did write a pretty schmaltzy, but it was about his mother.
Okay, well, let's.
That kind of turned me off to motherhood poems. It's so mushy and so. But I think you've got to define who can have, I believe you can have a mother's love without being a biological mother.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oops. I know. I
know. That's okay, a word about the poet. This is Rachel Zucker, who wrote this poem. It's from a book called Museum of Accidents. If you like it or are interested in reading the other poems in it, it is in the bookstore right now. She's a contemporary poet. This, I think this was first published in 2008, but then the book, Museum of Accidents, was a nominee for the National Book Critics Circle Award. She's the author of 4 books of poetry and 2 anthologies. The second anthology is, I forgot the first title, but it's... 100 poems for Obama's first 100 days in office. And so she enlisted lots of poets to write a poem for each day of Obama's first 100 days, and then they published that book, which is really interesting. And so won the National, or was nominated for the National Book Critics Circle Award, and Publishers Weekly named it like one of the best books of poetry of the year, right? But the interesting thing about dealing with a contemporary poem is that, unlike with some of the other ones that we've looked at this week, that to a certain extent have withstood a test of time. That is, the fact that we're reading a poem by Keats already says something about how great the poem is. With something written in 2008, it's really anybody's guess at this point. So it becomes a much more kind of loaded conversation in some ways because we don't know what other people are going to say about this. So does anybody feel comfortable reading this cold?
I'll do it.
Okay. All
right. The box is like this today. The box I live in, today, like this. And though similar, so achingly alike, ad infinitum, line over, the nine again, it is always nothing like before. Nothing, not even the surprise of another, so similar, day of box living. Once I was marked, and markedly different, and at times, while hopscotching the grounded mosaic, felt, my God, I've seen before a pattern just like this. I've been here. But no more. Now I have never been anywhere else, ever but here. And though I carry on, can't return. Even the day my firstborn son broke me, opened and split, shock shattered that quaint notion of before. Does it go into the back page?
Yeah.
Okay. Is no more than a rung of how I got a mother's now mine, a strung together beadwalk. This moment, this. Is not what I expected. Today my beautiful child eviscerates me, a charmer, a snake. He fits my living heart into his fist-blunt fangs, and I go willingly into love with him. He is every day a new child, and every day I am still in love means nothing like before. Remember when we used to remember things every night, say, remember the time, and the smell of the past, sometimes a portal opened up, and we slipped in there into the past, rose up to meet us. We were not so all alone then. Our lives had meaning, and we were not born again every goddamn day. But it felt what it felt like to be there in those lost places, the gone. Remember those days? But I can't. Now all of me, but this is gone. And I was never a girl. Never but mother, never. Every same day, new again. Every way is without a way, without or way to look back. To be back, to bring the fabric into a tight pucker or pocket or foxhole or hem. Some little space to fall into a breath, like an open grave or little death. Instead, I learned bird names for the shapes and colors and songs around me through every bird and different from every bird. I learned the map, watched the armies advance. Forward, they bellow and jab mercilessly with their spear points. Go on, carry. And so it is I haul my son's steps after day, each day, so swept away by love and terror, I would sometimes rather kill us all than go on like this. Marching, marching, new, 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 day. And when they are just too heavy to carry, I become stronger than is possible and carry on.
Wow. Wow. Awesome.
Any just initial reactions anybody wants to? We'll go through it more slowly, but anybody can say anything initially?
Acknowledge the wow.
Acknowledge the wow. Okay.
Oh, I just
yeah.
When I was reading it, I think even though it's a mother speaking, mm-hmm. I mean, I would think that a father might feel the same way.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's universal in that way.
Okay. So one question that it brings up is, can mother love ultimately be differentiated from father love in some way? You know, I mean, is it just parent love, right?
Well, here, the experience certainly can be differentiated.
Okay. All right, let's talk about that. First of all, I want to talk about, what is déjà vu?
You
must
be glad you've been here before.
You've asked that question before. Nice. All right. So the feeling like you've been in the same place doing the same thing at some other time before. And what have people had that feeling before? Yeah, what's it like when you have that feeling?
Very disconcerting.
It's disconcerting, kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's surreal. What? Surreal? It's
surreal.
Yeah. Okay. So she begins, the box is like this today. The box I live in today, like this. Thoughts about this first stanza? Who this speaker is? What she's like?
Not very exciting at this point.
No, right? In terms of language, the box is like this today. The box I live in today, like this, right? Not really exciting.
But it feels boxy.
Okay.
Because she repeats the words, and the words have lived.
Yeah.
Like she's trapped in.
Yeah.
Yes, right?
But there's also a sense of really having a hard time communicating.
Yes, because she's.
Like inside the box, mm-hmm. It's so vague,
yeah.
So nondescript.
Right.
It's hard to come up with the words to describe this feeling that I'm having perpetually.
So she can't, she's trying to explain it, she can't. There's a desire to show, right? It's like this, but do we know what this is yet? No, there's this, right, emphasis on trying to show but not being able to. So we already know we're dealing with a speaker who wants to show us something, but is having some sort of trouble doing that, right? This sense and the sense of boxiness being closed in.
Can I just say something?
Yes.
But even the language, you know, when kids are little, you change the way you speak.
Yeah.
So that you are trying to communicate with them and make them understand.
Yeah.
And in so doing, you lose a little bit of who you are.
Okay, fabulous. So we also, the diction here, because it's very simple, it's straightforward, it has repetition, also taps into sort of the language we use with a child. Great. Okay. And though similar, so achingly alike, ad infinitum, line over the nine, again, it's always nothing like before. Nothing, not even the surprise of another so similar day of box living. So what separation is she making here? She's drawing a dividing line.
Yeah, it's before the kids.
Okay. Yes.
The guys can relate to that, too.
Yeah.
The fathers, I think.
So we have, we're going to get this before, and then
before and after.
The today, right? The now, the emphasis on what's happening right now. Okay.
What is this expression, line over the nine?
teaching sixes and nines.
Oh.
There's a line to indicate top and bottom. That was what I was coming up with.
Yeah.
What?
It's actually,
it's
inverted. So it's.
So it's
I think it's when you're doing a fraction and you can't go, it's going to keep repeating forever. It's never going to resolve.
That's
and you put the infinity
the,
thing.
The infinity
like
sign.
As a,
infinity, right?
As you want.
Which means not quite
the
next thing.
That means no matter how long you keep dividing, it's never going to stop.
It's going to go on and on and on.
I thought the nine.
I didn't come up with that one.
The nine was about the 9 months when I heard the nine.
Oh, interesting.
Oh.
Yeah, and she does. She has three kids, so the line over the nine again. That's interesting. Yeah.
Well.
Okay. So, but what is the? What have we learned about what today? About what the now is like? Yes. Yes.
Boring.
Yes.
Yeah.
Trapped.
Mm-hmm. Sounds trapped.
So new, but the same. Does that sound familiar to anyone that's been a parent? Each day is different, but yeah, totally the same. Okay. Or in other, I mean, it's not. Certainly, I think there's other times in life where our days feel like that too.
I don't get a sense that it's boring, I guess, because
okay.
of the so achingly alike, in the sense that the tedium and exhaustion,
mm-hmm.
and part of this, obviously, having a 10-month-old,
that's
she woke up at 4:30, and, you know, it's, okay, she's going to wake up, we're not quite ready to get up, but we have to get up anyway, which isn't boring, it's just, you're so...
Yeah, I like that, tedium, rather than boring.
Tedious. Great. Okay. Once I was marked and markedly different, and at times, while hopscotching the grouted mosaic, felt, my God, I've seen before a pattern just like this. I've been here, but no more. What's going on there? What's she describing?
Childhood or her own childhood? Or...
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So that the grouted mosaic and the hopscotch is definitely childlike remembrances, right? What's she describing the sensation of, though?
That's the deja vu part.
Deja vu, right? The feeling that you've been here before, right?
Yep.
But it's always deja vu experiences in a place where you don't expect it.
Yeah.
There's a sense of adventure and freedom, because you don't experience deja vu unless you're out of context.
Yeah.
For that to happen, you don't.
Yes.
You don't have that I've been here before feeling in places that you've always been.
Oh, that's
you're
a
somewhere
great
new,
point.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you feel like, oh, this has happened to me before, but it's that
yeah.
sort of disconnected feeling because it,
yeah.
it shouldn't feel like this. Like you don't have a sense of deja vu at the supermarket.
That is a great point. That is a great point.
Every day.
No, I hadn't thought of that. That's great.
Yeah.
So,
that's right.
In order for deja vu to be happening, you have to be in new places, interacting with new people. Otherwise, it's not deja vu because, of course, you've been there 15
it's
years
just
times
familiar.
Before. Right. It's just familiar.
You have been there before, but you're there every day.
Right. So, right. It's okay. So, which harkens back to the title, right? The day I lost my deja vu, right? Lost the ability to have this happen, right? So I've been here, but no more, right? So she's not having this. Okay, does anybody notice between but no more and the rest of the poem just sort of glancing, visually, does it look different?
Yeah.
What do you notice that's different?
You don't have the straight
margin, right?
You lose caps at the beginning of the sentences.
Yes.
Just
you
like
lose the capitals at the beginning of the sentences.
And pronouns.
There's a side poem going on sometimes, it almost seems.
Yeah, it's moving back and forth
yeah.
across
I'm,
the page.
I wonder if the side poem is meant to be read separately one time just to try and understand it, but I haven't gotten it.
Oh, okay.
Kind of scattered.
Scattered.
Yeah,
like your
scattered.
Mind, your
okay.
moment,
but
and then,
moment.
Oh, I have to change the laundry.
Growing, getting bigger, longer.
Longer each time.
Yep.
As you get thicker and longer.
Yep. Anything else you notice?
Having stops and starts. So, like, when you get interrupted.
Yeah.
I'm doing something by a child.
Yes.
Okay.
So it stops in replaces. So she'll be like, now I have never been anywhere else ever but here, and though I carry on, right? So it's like stopping and beginning in these odd kind of jolts, right? Okay. Yeah.
But also, it's just more interesting. It's
okay.
Visually, it's more interesting as it goes.
Okay.
On.
You get a sense that the belly of this poem is growing.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Okay.
for what has kind of happened to her, right? Once I was marking it, right? And then all of a sudden, she totally switches gears and we're in this totally different formal landscape, right? Where things are going to be scattered, things are going to be moving around and growing and stopping and starting unexpectedly and not having the capital letters when there should be capital letters, right? Not having the right punctuation. Okay, now I have never been anywhere else ever but here, and though I carry on, can't return. Anybody want to say anything about?
It's like your life as you knew it has stopped. But you keep on going because you cannot imagine life without where you are now.
Okay.
Old jokes about being a little bit pregnant. She can't return.
Yeah. Great.
I heard the young people on the porch the other day singing The Circle Game by Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
And I realized that she'd written that song probably before she was 30 and probably hadn't been a parent because she felt like it was going around in circles. This woman does not feel like she's going around in circles here. And not camp returning isn't the Joni Mitchell camp return. This is a different camp return. And those kids singing that song are singing it as certain innocence, in fact, singing the Joni Mitchell song.
Yeah.
There's two different ways to read that stanza.
Okay.
With and without that period. Now I've never been anywhere else, ever but here, and though I carry on, can't return. Drop the period. It's now I've never been anywhere else ever, but here, and though I carry on, can't return. You change that into, if you move that, dramatically changes the phrasing and what that stanza means.
Yeah. And because we have a lower case letter there, right, there's some doubt about, yeah, there's punctuation there, but
does it really?
Who knows, right? And I want you to keep this. This is the first time she mentions carrying on, right? And so in some ways, this becomes somewhat the problem of the poem. Though I carry on, I can't return, right? So that the sense, so in some ways, she's dealing with this dilemma in the perpetual movement forward, right? Like perpetually moving onward, next day, next day, next day, without access to looking back, to looking backwards. We're gonna see this played out a little bit more. So even the day my firstborn son broke me open and split, shocked, shattered that quaint notion of before. So even that day, so that day is no more than a rung of how I got a mother's now mind, a strung together beads walk. This moment, this. Anybody want to comment on that?
Yeah, you have to live in the now when you're with your kids. Because they demand so much. You know, they have needs right now that need to be met.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to look back or forward.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and the repetition of this, right?
And this tells me she was sufficiently mature when her kids were born. Because a young mom disassociates from the kid more. She articulates her disassociation, but she's committed to this kid.
I also want to, at any moment here, as we're discussing this, people who haven't been parents, or even if you have, but if you think of other moments in your life or times where you felt this same sort of feeling of having to be in the mode of constantly moving forward and not looking back. I mean, if any time we mention something and somebody thinks, well, yeah, that's true about parenting, but it's also true about X, Y, or Z. Throw up your hand about that, too. I think that's important to recognize. Yeah.
I see something that's hitting me is you cannot tell someone what it's going to feel like to be a mother. I truly believe that. It has to happen to you to feel it. That's the sameness as a mother's now mind, I think she now has, because she's the first, it's her firstborn, you told us earlier. That's the same experience about Holden Village. Over the many to be excited and explain Holden Village, and there aren't words to explain such an oddball thing as we have up here. And many experiences where people have to come here before they get that aha moment that you get when you become a mother or a father. You get it anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
It seems like the now mind is something that is sought and prized in a lot of pursuits, like prayer, reading, art. You know, whenever you're just, you lose yourself, you're right there.
Yeah.
But this is also a strung together bead. You've got a now mind, and you've got these little beads that are also...
And each one, right, is a now mind moment. Yeah.
Well, no, I was thinking...
Or how are you imagining
the beads that, like, if you had a real now mind, like spirituality would be totally alone and really purely focused. Mm-hmm. But here, you've got that, but you also are, like, tied to these other people, you know, who are pulling you out of that.
Right.
You know, and so you're not as an isolated bead walking through life, but you're walking through life, you know, like strung up with others.
Yeah.
And so it's a different kind of now mind than the now mind you get in other pursuits.
Okay.
I see it as a lack of planning, or that it's so now that you are so in the moment that you can't, okay, I want to do this at 4:00. So that time becomes like these little beads.
Snippets,
And
a
like
moment of now, a moment of now.
Like the strung together bead, there's a path that's predetermined for you. The strung together bead isn't rolling around on the floor doing its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's on a string. It's going wherever the string wants it to go. This is a person who's already said, I've lost my past, and now I've lost my personal future. All I have is this moment to take care of this child, and my personal aspirations for who I'm going to be no longer matter. I'm not just a person anymore. I've got this other way of being.
Yeah.
I particularly like the very next line where it says, it's not what I expected.
Yeah.
That hits me over the head. You know, you're pregnant, you're looking forward to this motherhood child, and you don't realize the box you have put yourself in.
Yeah, and I love the, like, dot, dot, dot there, right?
Yeah,
so it's not what I expect.
Boy,
wow. Right? Kind of trailing off.
Her lips, no.
And as she goes on here, it seems like she's not the actor anymore. It's like the child is acting on her. And,
go ahead.
She's the, not, but there's some resentment, there's some, you know, feeling that she's now kind of describing her life at the hands of her children.
Yeah. Let's move on to that, because I think you're right. Today, my beautiful child eviscerates me. Lots of contrast in that line, right? A charmer, a snake. Are these necessarily good words? Charming can be good, but here, a snake. He fits my living heart into his fist, blunt fangs. And I go willingly, here's an interesting line break, I go willingly into love with him. He is every day a new child, and every day I'm still in love means nothing like before. What do you think, I'm just curious about this, could we substitute other kinds of love there? I mean, is love in terms of your relationship with God, does that fit it also? Does romantic love with a partner?
This is not partnership love here. Every day I'm still in love means nothing like before. That's the way I read it. I blast out that.
Yeah.
Because your kid, all the good things you did for your kid yesterday, about nothing.
So true. I mean,
I think there's the unconditionality of the love we have for our children as the love God has for us. Mm-hmm. When we're snakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I keep thinking about Paul on the Damascus Road.
Okay.
I mean, to go back, but then Holden Village can offer the same aha experience on one of trails or roads or dining halls,
yeah.
Firesides.
Yeah. It's powerful then to think of God saying these lines to us mm-hmm. as children, right?
Well, I think it's a very connected kind of love, even if it's from a distance, very, you know, it's kind of mushy.
It's intimate, but raw.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. We like, a lot of times, there are certain poems that really like to speak of motherhood in beautiful, glowing, perfect terms, right? Isn't it so blissful and wonderful to be a mother, right?
Gooey.
Yeah, it's gooey. this isn't gooey, right? Yeah.
Well, you know, I understand the loving part, but to me, I get caught up with this, today, my beautiful child eviscerates me.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it, when I hear eviscerates, I think of the last stanza of the first page.
Mm-hmm.
Or even the day my firstborn son broke me open and split shock shattered the quaint notion of before. And she's talking about her physical experience of giving birth
yeah.
to the child. And that, to me, this is where, as a male, a dad, not a mom, you know, I do feel it differentiating her experiences versus sort of my experiences as a dad.
Okay.
It
could be the emotional experience too. Kind of
being split
open. You know, they're feeling kind of, I don't think it necessarily is physical, but that just being ripped out of your chest.
It can be physical, but it certainly could be metaphorical
mm-hmm.
also, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's something about that phrasing that's not broke me open.
Yeah.
We usually don't use the word open. We would just broke me open. So I wonder whether, again, that's even the day my first son broke me, stop.
Right.
Opened and split
yeah.
shock shattered
yeah.
the quaint notion of before.
Yeah.
Broke it open and then destroyed. Like, I'm not sure, I'm unresolved about whether, and that's deliberate, right? But
yeah, right. And, I mean, that's a good line to just look at in terms of her. It's almost, we looked at Hopkins earlier this week, and the split shock shattered has some of his just force of pushing through this language and just kind of beating you on the head with it. She's not slowing down at all, right? She's pushing right through. Well, let's, oh my goodness. All right, we're gonna kind of keep zooming through here, okay? Remember when we used to remember things every night and say, remember the time and the smells of the past, and sometimes a portal opened up and we slipped in there, into the past, rose up to meet us. We were not so all alone then. Our lives had meaning and we were not born again every goddamn day, but felt it, what it felt like to be there in those lost places, the gone. Remember those days? But I can't. On this part. What does she miss?
Being just a woman.
Yeah. But what does that mean for her? Does that make sense? Like,
mm-hmm.
what did she used to be able to do then that she can't do now?
Remember the past.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other question I have is, okay, so where is her husband in this story, her spouse?
I think this is a too.
Yeah, I do too.
I think she's talking to him.
Yeah.
Right, okay,
yeah.
We just got
this
the week, right? It's
the
first introduction of the week.
We never really appeared.
We used to sit around
yeah.
and talk to each other.
And reminisce.
We didn't just flop exhausted into bed or figure
right.
out whose turn it is to get up and
right.
deal with the crying child. Remember those days? I can't.
Right. But I want to suggest, because I think we often talk about, like, what you lose when you become a parent. Oh, you lose sleep, maybe you lose a sense of, like, identity about the self or whatever. And she's saying you lose at this particular moment in time an ability to reflect on the past, really, to go back. Like, your life is so in forward motion all the time that you sort of lack that ability to spend time reflecting. And what I want to, because we're going to keep moving through the poem, but what I'd sort of like to suggest is that I think the one of the ways that the poem can be read as being more universal is the fact that she wants to introduce this idea of, at various stages in our life, the kind of temporal sort of emotion that those stages have. And for her, this moment of parenthood, there's this break. And now she's in a place where it's every day. And as a poet especially, who used to have this ability to sit there and think and reflect and go back in her mind, she doesn't have that. And I think she's in some ways honoring this place in life that means this kind of thinking, this way of being in the world, right? But theoretically, I would venture that a different poem could be written about getting to a place in your life where the forward motion begins to stop and it becomes a lot more about reflection, about remembering, right? That a lot of those forward days are behind you. And so, but maybe I'm wrong there. But I just want to suggest that in some ways this poem might be about honoring or thinking about where you are in your life in terms of where your mind is. Is it in the present moment? Is it the constant now mind? Or are you in a place of past mind? Or are you in a place where you're always looking towards the future? What's going to happen next, so that you're not present to the now, right? This poem is about the now, but is it in some ways it calling attention to the way that our brain operates at different periods of time in our life? Yeah. Does that kind of make sense?
The now is against the backdrop of the before.
Yes.
And the now would have different or little meaning.
Yeah.
Were it not that she could express deja vu.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. Oh, excuse me. It's fun. This is good advice for new parents because you get so caught up in the, if only they'd sleep another hour, all the things that you were going through, and you get the feeling this is going to last forever. Maybe you don't feel that way, but that's often when you're in the middle of all that it's going to last forever. You forget how fast, from my vantage point, those times go. Then the other point that she's talking about, remember when my sister and I are past all these busy part, we're now back at the point where we can say, because we're sisters, remember when. We're the only two people that can remember some of those memories. And so that's another poem.
Yeah.
But that's a valuable point.
But it points to that poem too. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I have a different take on this.
Yes.
I have teenage kids. And I have what I call the golden childhood years where they're, 7, 6, 7, and 8. And you can do all these wonderful things for your kids and with them, and they love to be with you. And then when they become teenagers, they're out the door. And this is how I communicate with my teenagers. Remember when you were little and you used to do this? And that's kind of how I'm connecting with them right now.
Interesting.
Is the we in the poem, someone said they thought that this whole poem was to the husband. The other way of reading it is that she becomes completely estranged from him during the course of the poem. That is, it begins with first person, goes to remember when we did this. And the question is it that they don't have any shared memories anymore because they're not a we, because she reverts completely to the first person for the whole last part of the poem. So
right. After I can't, right?
Exactly.
Those days I can't.
I can't is how she pulls out of that little stanza with a we, as though we're no longer a we now. And that's the dark way of reading it.
Right.
I'm not sure whether it's that or whether it's...
Well, I think whether it's necessarily... I don't think the poem's necessarily about the ending of a relationship, but I think it is about the fact that we get the I at the beginning, the I at the end, the we in the middle, and that sense of moving in between feeling like a very isolated individual in a relationship when you're with a kid. Like, sometimes feeling like you're doing it alone, or you're, like, passing the kid off between you, right? Like, we're just...
Is it just me, or does it seem like her language gets more incoherent in these stanzas, because the sentences sort of run into each other, and you can't tell where one ends and the next one begins, and that wasn't really that way before.
Yeah, and it's going to get, and let's, okay, I think you're right, I think it gets even more run into each other in this last section. Now, all of me but this is gone, and I was never a girl. Right? So also the sense of moving into the state of mother. never anything besides this person that you are in this single instant. Like, you've lost into as a connection to that part of yourself. Never but mother, never. Every same day, new again. Every way is without a way out or way to look back, to be back, to bring the fabric into a tight pucker or pocket or foxhole or hem, some little space to fall into, a breath like an open grave or little death. Instead, I learn bird names for the shapes and colors and songs around me, though every bird is different from every bird. I learn the map, watch the armies advance. Forward, they bellow and jab mercilessly with their spear points. Go on, carry. And so it is, I haul my sons step after day, each day so swept away by love and terror, I would sometimes rather kill us all than go on like this, marching, marching, new day. And when they are just too heavy to carry, I become stronger than is possible and carry on.
Back to us all. The I becomes us all.
Yeah.
And there's carry on again.
And what is, and with how about punctuation, what Anne was saying, how does punctuation and sort of...
It disappears altogether.
Yeah, it just is, right, it's a breathless line.
It's a breathless, yes, that's right.
And you have punctuation at the end.
No, and the end punctuation isn't end punctuation in the middle. They're quotes, they're commands. It's not, the thought doesn't...
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just getting some meaning out of this that probably nobody else does. That
great, share it.
It seems to me like when you give birth and you've got this new little being, you have given up your life. You've God brought in this new life. And things will never be the same again, and that's what she's talking about. And as the child grows, there are times when you become quite depressed about being in your box there, you know? And she tells it so very well.
I think in some ways this connects. Petter was saying yesterday, his session, we were talking about God asking us to deny ourselves, right? What's the passage exactly?
To mark, take up your cross and deny.
And somebody related that directly to this moment of parenthood. We sort of got into a discussion of what it means to deny the self. And I don't know that I would... I'm probably not very Christian when it comes to what that might actually mean, I guess. But I think you could, like what you're saying, read this as a poem of someone who is in agony about having to deny parts of herself and trying to come to an understanding of what that means. Yeah. Good grief. Well, we have 5 more minutes at least, right? This started... So what, goodness gracious, okay, we went through a lot here. I think one thing we didn't talk to that much, but I think is important here, is the verb carry. We get that at the beginning, we get it in relationship to these armies carrying. I have all the definitions of carry here, but we don't have time to go through that in particular. I do want to just ask this question about whether, when this is a contemporary poem, is it great? Or is it good? Is it nice? Is it, what do you think, you know?
I think if you're in the now, it's great.
Okay. So if this is the place where you are in terms of your life, not even necessarily parenthood, but if you're living now moments.
It's like the words that are here that you just can't find or find the time for are just, there they are.
Yeah.
You know, it's finding them through someone else's experience that are similar to yours.
Yeah.
Different.
Okay.
So my wife was not able to attend today, although she'd meant to, because she's being a mother to our son and listening to him read. And I know we'll go back and read this and give us more to talk about, because this describes a lot of her journey. In that sense, it's great, because it will help us communicate.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Conversation will center around parenthood, though. I'm wondering...
Yeah.
And her experience, though. I mean,
that does become the question, right? Is this a poem that speaks to people who aren't parents?
That's hard. Well, I would.
Well, let's.
Read
are there
to a teenager,
John somebody. Schwain, you're not. Anne?
Yeah, I think it's very enlightening.
Okay.
It's a window that's very it's very enlightening.
Okay.
I don't think they could really get the total
And you just have to keep going, and I think that's a universal message.
Yeah.
Aren't those the children speaking to her?
Yeah.
Carry me.
Well, and I think she's talking about all the kid things that you have to learn, right? The birds, the colors, the shapes, the map. Mm-hmm. And then I think we're seeing the little armies, right? The little army men, you know? And so they're sort of being enacted in this carrying, too.
She puts sort of a weird anachronism, too, because little army men now don't have spear points. Little boys don't play with little toy soldiers that walk around with spears.
My grandkids do.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
I've never seen.
No, I don't think they're talking about toys. I don't think these are toys.
Well, right. I mean, it's obviously deeply metaphorical too.
Yeah.
Right.
Is this a poem about motherhood or being a mother who has only boys? How important is the boy part?
Oh, interesting.
Well, in this section, I think the boy part is pretty
important. I think it's very important.
Because
I mean,
she has three boys and all the military references here.
Right.
You know, if it was a bunch of girls, there'd be a different game in that side of it.
I think so, too.
There may be a different experience of motherhood.
Yeah.
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 And what do you think?
Two of my girls would be marching as soldiers, and one would be flitting across the room as a princess.
So it depends on the kid.
One of my girls played with guns.
Yeah. As terrifying as this last kid is, I'm glad that she brings the love back into it.
Yeah.
She is swept away by love, as she was in this earlier evisceration stanza. And even though it's a terrifying image, I would rather kill us all than go on like this, which we know sometimes happens. Mm-hmm. She's still in love with them.
Yeah.
Which is comforting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I also just want to bring up, I think a lot of times when people read contemporary poems that are in free verse, there's this sense of like the poet was like, woo-woo, whatever on the page, la la la, right? And a couple of you spoke at the beginning to the experience of motherhood as being this sense of being scattered, being rushed, moving forward and onward, and I think that definitely what she does in terms of motherhood is sort of gives us the experience of it through the form itself, right? Not just the content of the words and what's happening, but also this lack of punctuation, this inability to stop, the words being pushed together, no time for capital letters, the words moving all over this, right? So that the form here has, even though it's nothing like some of the sonnets or very regimented work that we've looked at, like we've looked at this Hopkins poem that's like hugely specific in terms of its what it's doing formally, but that there is an intentionality about form here. It's just trying to convey a deeply different experience of the world and the extent to which we believe that a poem's music and language has to get into our body, has to become an experience beyond just explaining what it means.
One influences the other.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Another thought, and I hate to dominate, but I have this suspicion that she's actually pregnant as she's writing this. Another time.
Uh-huh.
My wife talked about segmented brain and lack of memory and disorganization and chaos. And she doesn't say how many songs, and there's just sort of this sense of inevitability about, here we go again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was thinking, but I'm wondering if she's writing this while pregnant.
Yeah.
Like maybe the next of three kids.
Yeah.
That some of that scatteriness is part of that thing that happens.
Maybe that's a bit of the universality of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great.
I mean, we're all pregnant with tomorrow's world, right?
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's a great place to end.
It's a great poem.
Oh, good. Well, whether you think it's great or not, I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for so great.